The following is brought to you in part by MFC Studios. The views and opinions of the show's hosts and guests do not necessarily reflect those of the owners, management, or staff of WGBB. And now, it came from the radio.
Came from the radio. This is your host, Mario Torres, speaking. With me in the studio, I have Charlie Saladino sitting next to me.
Hey, how's everybody?
I have Hassan.
Hi, Mark.
Sitting across from us, back from Parks Unknown. What was that?
Parks Unknown.
And,
wonderful place.
And we have a special in-studio guest. It's Patrick Riley, if I pronounce your name correctly.
That's right.
Hey, I got the name right. I never get the name
never
right.
Gets the name, sure.
I feel privileged today.
Well done, Mark.
And Shemp Herman Sinertia, who hasn't been on the show for quite some time. I've actually been checking. It's been like 2-3 months we haven't heard from
He's
him.
He's not on the show anymore, apparently.
He actually called me today, and he says, I'll be at the show tonight. And I said, okay.
He's excommunicated himself from the
He's
going to
be here in spirit only. He's not.
He's here right now. You can't see him?
Oh.
You don't feel his aura?
Just call him Phantom Sinertia.
So anybody's having any trouble listening to us on the air, you can go online www.am1240wgbb.com and listen to us on our live audio streaming. Also on the GBB website, we have the high definition webcam, which you can see us in high definition right
high
now.
Def.
Yeah, we're in high.
Look, we're clear. Get used to it.
You don't like high definition? You prefer us in low definition?
Huh? I prefer it's not on camera at all. It's
so
radio.
You want it to no definition.
This is radio.
No definition.
Radio.
Radio definition?
Oh, yes. I'd like to be in radio definition. Our definition.
And the phone number here is area code
61-888-8811.
Or 111. Someone's been paying attention.
1188.
It only has been, what, 10 years?
It's right there, man.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
not
it is.
That
Way nicely done, Hassan.
Yeah. Done. See, and because it's radio and not television, no one knows how stupid that joke was. That's heck yeah, man. So, heck yeah.
Let me just take it away. With
take
the
it away with
news.
News
from the Me Too department.
Me Too.
Marvel Comics has decided to follow DC by now releasing all of its current titles digitally the same day it becomes available on comic book stores.
Good.
So
put those stores out of business.
Yeah, that's
put those retailers out.
That's what's going to happen. I mean,
yep.
if you make it available
out, out retailer
completely. Out. Didn't we have were you hear that show where that we had a guest that was saying that the physical item is now going to become the collector's item?
Yep.
Oh, all right then.
Which is good.
You think so?
I think the world's going to heck and we're all going to die. But, you know, hey, once I've accepted that, I'm actually for it and I can actually help it die. So I'm all for I'm all for digitizing everything and not having anything tangible, no tangible money, no tangible no tangible items that you actually pay for, which are invisible money. Not leaving my house, having intangible friends on Facebook. Having friends that I've known for 20 years have a birthday, and then writing happy birthday on a little field of stream, and then hitting send, and then feeling I've done my duty for that friend that I've had for the last 20 years, whose birthday parties I've actually gone to or helped arrange, and now all I have to do is say happy birthday on Facebook, and I've done my friendly obligation.
No, nothing.
Yep. Don't even have to get a card. And you know what? I don't even have to remember it because Facebook does it for me. It will tell me, hey, your friend's got a birthday today. Don't be a jerk.
What was that?
Tell them happy birthday.
What was that show where they were digitizing people? The old show.
Yes, that show.
Captain Power.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, Captain Power.
You expected me to whip Captain Power out of nowhere?
Yes. With the bad guy, his job was that he was going to digitize you and put you into the main computer thing.
Look, you know what? That would be awesome because if you were digitized and put into the computer, at least you would be on the same plane of existence with the digitized universe. This is just us being useless husks of flesh that don't move anymore, and everything is at the press of a button, and nothing is real, and we'll have no value for the things that we own anymore because none of it's real, and we can get a replacement or some kind of phantom facsimile of that thing online and be happy with it.
Well, on the same lines of that, for people who actually do go to places.
Is this like a segue? Are you actually segueing into?
It's a fake segue. It's a fake segue. Okay. I didn't say speaking up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's a joke segue.
Yeah. It's a quasi segue.
For a second week in a row, Puss in Boots remained at number one in the box office, pulling in another $33 million over the weekend.
Story about a non-real cat.
Last week, it pulled in $34 million, which makes this movie one of the lowest drop-offs ever from one week to another in the history of movies.
The lowest drop-off, as in that's good. It
yes.
didn't drop off quite significantly.
It made $1 million less the week before. No other.
Okay, like, we're going to change the verbiage. It's the higher retainance of its proceeds as opposed to the lowest drop-off, which makes it sound pretty negative. Just for radio parlance, so people out there who don't understand numbers cannot think it's a bad thing.
They made lots of money both weeks in a row.
Or that.
Coming in second place is Tower Heist with a, quote, disappointing $25 million.
Oh, what a shame. Eddie Murphy, still relevant 40 years after Delirious. He's only making $25 million movies now.
Yeah, I guess he can't get that yacht. Yeah.
Executives.
We expected this to make $600 million, even though we only spent about $10 million on it.
Well,
darn
that's,
it.
That's what that's
darn it.
That's the
darn it.
But executives of Puss in Boots says that this was their plan all along for a
to make lots of money off of a movie that they made.
For a multi-week opening, stating that this movie has grossed more than $75 million after just 10 days, and to have this kind of momentum now, going into the holiday plan period with Veterans Day coming up behind him, and then heading into Thanksgiving, that was always our plan.
Right.
Yeah, well, you know.
Not that it worked.
Veterans Day always been a big movie day.
Yeah, this is a big day for fake digital cats
movies,
with
yeah.
swords. That's what I always think of when I...
God forbid thanking the people.
No! Cats with swords.
Go to
cats with swords,
see
Charlie.
A cat in Uggs.
Speaking of Tower Heist,
Mr. Segway.
Tower Heist.
director Brett Ratner has just.
Oh, the good one.
Quote,
the good director.
Stepped down
no.
from directing the Oscars due to his recent comments about the gays, Lindsay Lohan, and Olivia Munn. Just after.
Wait, what did he say? Repeat everything he said so that we too can step down from the Oscars.
There's no follow-up news.
You don't have a quote of what he said?
I have the quote.
All right, excellent.
I don't have it written in front of me, but I have the quote. He said that when he was asked about...
He said, I hate the gays. Out of nowhere. He said, Brett Ratner, you're going to direct the Oscars? He said, I hate the gays. And that's all. There wasn't even a lead up to that. Like, the reporters were like, what
no
are you doing?
What was the question? That was
yeah,
the response.
I hate the gays. And they're the gays.
Yes, the gays. No, he said that when asked about rehearsing, he said that rehearsing is for F-A-G-S.
Oh.
And that caused offense to the gay
well
community.
Well done, Brett.
Well, you know, in England, those are cigarettes.
Yes. So rehearsing is for cigarettes.
All right, look. I'm going to jump into editorial mode
here
right at
go.
The start. This guy makes movies. So he understands the value of being recorded. Why do people act like what they say doesn't have any tangible meaning anymore? I don't understand. People are like, oh, that wasn't intended to be a factual statement. You know, you set it out in the open. You put it out there in the ether. It's there. It's alive. It's got a life of its own now. Maybe even if you hate political correctness and you think it's a blight on our society, you have to understand that just a couple hundred million people subscribe to it to know how to act and... I don't know, maybe you should respect it a little bit, you know, and not run around using euphemisms for people that are unpleasant.
Well, I can't wait for the apology on, it was taken out of context, mm-hmm. and I didn't mean it in a bad way.
Well, we understand.
And then he's, you know, and I'm going to be sitting there going, how'd you mean it?
Yeah, we understand what he
you
meant.
You said it for a cause and effect.
I would get into trouble because I always say stuff like that, trying to be ironic, like, oh, that's for girls, you know?
Well, you,
so it's supposed to be...
The girl community.
You cannot get in trouble because you make blanket statements that pretty much make it all right. You're like, people are idiots.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's no discrimination.
When you say it's all inclusive, it's all
like
inclusive.
Multi-ethnic.
Yeah, yeah.
You're all
a bunch of idiots.
Yeah.
So there's no one group that can form an uprising. It's because
There's no one group that's the problem with anything. You're never going to narrow down. If we could find that group, we would have wiped them out a long time ago. You know, as messed up as we've all been in the head in so many periods of our history.
The idiot factor lives within all of us.
Exactly.
In many cultures.
Like a multi-million-dollar
right.
director.
Sometimes there's a group of idiots.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what they are because they're still human. And for every one of them, there's three of another race, you know. So
prepared to be morons in their own special way. Wait, what did you say about Lindsay Lohan?
Oh, he was commenting about how he had sex with Lindsay Lohan and Olivia Munn and how he made them take a STD test before having sex with them.
That guy's a moron. That's why. That he stepped down because he's a freaking idiot. That guy's a moron. It's over. All right, we're done with that. Move on.
And
no, no more. He's an idiot.
And because of which, his friend Eddie Murphy, who was set to host the Oscars, has also stepped down from hosting the Oscars.
Well,
so no more.
Eddie should really think about what horse he's backing right there.
Yeah.
Seahorse, because he was in Trek and never mind. But that's I don't know. That guy's a stone cold idiot. And he makes terrible movies. That's what I was joking before. His movies are terrible. I can name four of them and they're all bad.
Okay.
I won't though.
Yes, thank you.
Well,
not
Trading Places.
X-Men 3. Trading Places.
No, he's talking about Brett and Ratner. Not Brett
Ratner.
Oh,
I thought you were talking about Eddie Murphy. Never mind.
Like, wow, Brett Ratner was like an embryo when Trading Places came out.
I was like, wait a minute. Miscommunication here.
Rush Hours 1, 2, 3, 4, 10.
Rush Hour 2.
No, no. And X-Men 3. Terrible. And Red Dragon, which did not require a remake. Because the original Manhunter by Michael Mann was good enough. And it was terrible. And actually, if you're an idiot like me and you watch the movie and you listen to the commentary, that the man who wrote the screenplay was doing a commentary with Brett Ratner, and he was criticizing some of his shots on the commentary. It's fantastic. It's wonderful.
Is that why you like listening to the
sometimes.
All right. All right, let me see.
What's more in the news? Who died?
Yeah, we'll get to the
oh, I'm sorry.
Part.
I'm jumping ahead.
And just
Didn't you miss me?
Speaking of DVDs,
Mr. Segway
just leaked online off of the Harry Potter 7 Part 2 DVD, which is due out this Friday. J.K. Rowling had confessed that early on she had planned to kill off Ron Weasley halfway through the series. This revelation was done in an interview done by Harry Potter himself, Daniel Radcliffe, as part of the special features on the DVD. So, originally, she was going to kill off one of the most beloved characters of the series.
She didn't know he was beloved at the time. It's like any of the stories I write. If I kill off the characters, are you going to be like, yeah, so what, do you want a hamburger after the show? What? You're not going to care. No
That's
one's going to care.
Why? I can't, like, let's say... If
That's only
if
relevant now after 2,000 movies and a million books and a gojillion dollars that she's made.
So we're putting us all on the same lines as if, let's say, Mark Hamill had interviewed George Lucas, and George Lucas said, yeah, I was going to kill off Han Solo in the first act of the first of the fourth.
He's already said that. He was supposed to kill off Han Solo in Return of the Jedi. Huh? And even Harrison Ford wanted to die. He wanted out. And then at the last minute, he's like, I changed my mind. That's George's want to do. And then now
George
Harrison
Lucas
Ford...
changes his mind?
Yeah, I know. Amazing. I know. He changes his mind after he's filmed the film. That's the amazing thing. After he's edited, when he's editing, he's changed. I don't want to do this entire sequence. You know, move that guy over there, move that guy up, make that white, and make that black, and then print it.
I got a computer now. I can do stuff.
Exactly. And my movies will get exponentially worse.
All right.
But according to everybody else, not me.
Speaking of stuff getting exponentially worse,
Mr.
Look at that. How do I do it? How do I do it?
Director Julie Taymor has decided to sue the producers of Spider-Man Turn Off the Dark.
Of course she has.
Saying that they
I never intended for the show to be good. So I'm suing them.
She's saying that they violated her creative rights and they haven't compensated her for the work on the musical.
They violated her creative rights.
They haven't compensated her for people falling in the band on the orchestra pits. How could they not do that?
Tell them we did. We didn't put you in jail. That was your compensation.
How dare they not compensate? Her attorney says the producer's actions have left her no choice but to resort to legal recourse to protect of her rights. The lawsuit seeks half of all profits, gains, and advantages derived from the sale, license, transfer, or lease of the rights in any original Spider-Man book, along with permanent ban of use of her name, likeness, and connection with promotional film without her written consent. It also seeks that a jury trial determine...
It also says she's a poopy head, and therefore we're not giving her any money.
and her lawyer also said, pee-pee, caca, no substance.
Exactly.
And I quote.
Yeah. And we don't like that hat.
Yes.
So the lawsuit is in excess of $1 million.
Hmm.
One little cable, you forget the title.
Yeah, and they treat you like you're a pariah.
The sad thing about
that. Wait, there's the sad thing that's to come?
Wait, the whole thing was not sad? Womp, womp, womp.
This is a real sad thing.
No, right, here's the real sad thing.
The co-creator of Spider-Man, Steve Ditko, still to this day has not received a dime of any show, or anything related to Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And this lady here decided to sue them for $1 million. There's something wrong with that.
What a country.
She should give some of that to Steve Ditko. No, wait, and that'd be difficult right now.
His estate.
Yes, they could give it to the estate of Steve Ditko.
All right, let's see. I guess we should move to the sad portion.
Who died?
Heavy D died this
week. I know about that.
At the age of 44, collapsing at his home. Andy Rooney died at the age of 92 from complications of minor surgery on the 2nd. On the 2nd of October, he announced his semi-retirement from 6
months. Right,
and then he dies like 2 minutes later.
Yeah, I know.
Smoking Joe Fraser.
Yep. Well, that was a bad week.
He died of liver cancer. And, well, we have a side announcement, a side death.
A
side death, yes.
You can't announce that someone's a side death. You can't marginalize someone.
No, I'm saying it's important to us and to the show.
It's still not a side death.
Sometimes co-host Alan Rossman, his father-in-law just passed away at the age of 86, like 2 days ago. So that's another sad one.
That is sad.
And topping off the list of all the sad news that we have, Bill Keane, creator and artist of the Family Circus, died on Tuesday. In an interview, he was quoted as saying, "We are, in the comics, the last frontier of good, wholesome family humor and entertainment. On radio, television, magazines, and the movies, you can't tell what you're going to get. But when you look at the comics page, you can usually depend on something accessible by the entire family. I would rather have the readers react with a warm smile, a tug at their heart, or a lump in their throat as we call doing the same things in their own families." He was 89. So with that, we're going to take
we got
to
stop ending on those.
We came in right,
Hi, this is Amory. You've heard my voice open and close the show. Now we want to hear your voice. If you have a business or product, you can record a commercial here. We offer 30 and 60 second spots. For more information, contact Mark at mfc_studios@hotmail.com. And now, here's some music. Wow, that was hot. Now, back to our show.
This is the longest break ever.
From the radio show, Mark Torres, speaking along with Charlie Saladino, Son Godwin, and Patrick Riley as our guest.
Hi, Patrick.
That music you were just listening to was from track number 8 of the Vixens of Virtue, Vixens of Vice, Season 2, available on Amazon right now, created by Keith Jacks for Third Rail Productions at www.t-r-p.net. And that was track 8, which was Confronts. We were very confrontational during the break.
Yeah, we were chasing each other around the table.
Yes.
And Charlie has a...
I lunged over the table, by the way.
And
now
Charlie,
my chiropractor will get another wing.
And Charlie, you have an announcement?
Yes, I do. This is very important. You know how I am with animals and shelters and dogs and everything. Well...
Let's bring them all down.
Yeah. There's reasons that dogs are in shelters, and that's because their owners have no idea that what a responsibility a dog is. And when the dog does something, you know, that they can't understand.
Like eat a baby.
They
Those darn eating baby dog.
No. Not to that point. No. No, and
wacky antics.
This is why the shelters are being overrun, because people do not understand what their dogs are, why they're behaving a certain way. And these people who run this dog training and rehabilitation center are giving an amazing seminar on Thursday, November 17th at 7 o'clock. And they'll give you the answers because they're certified and they're professional dog behavior experts, and they'll tell you why dogs do what they do and how they communicate and how you could communicate with them. So may make your life a lot easier with your pet, which everyone should do. So it's going to be you should call and reserve a seat. It's $10 for adults and children over 10. And they do have a babysitter on the premises, so you can bring the little kids. And the rehabilitation center is called the Dog Chick, and it's 425 North Country Road, St. James, and the number is 631-423-0690. So really, for your dog's well-being and for your well-being, get there. And also they have a website, and it is dogtraining123@yahoo.com. so get in touch with Charlene or Wendy down there. They're great people, and they're amazing trainers and dog behaviorists, so they can tell you what's going on right there. And more people will be a lot more happier with their puppies and won't put them in those mean shelters.
And the dog won't eat your baby.
Yes, that's the no baby eating portion of the seminar,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
I used to treat my dog.
Obviously,
with
you will know the minute you get a dog that eats babies. You will pick that up.
That will, yeah.
Because limbs will be missing, and Rover will have a smile.
That won't escape your attention
yes,
for too
yeah,
long.
Yeah.
Didn't we have a child here? Where did he go?
Nah,
that boy's like,
figment of your
imagination. The dog goes, you know.
All right, here's a question, real quick. Do you think that people just don't know how to raise dogs anymore, or do you think that people don't have the commitment for what it takes to actually take care of a dog?
I think people don't realize what it takes to take care of an animal. It is a commitment, and they don't. I think they just see the fun part and everything like that. But it is a child. It has.
Yeah, but how hard is it to have a dog and to, you know, you feed it regularly, you walk it, you take it to the vet, you know, whenever you see it wobbling or, you know, whatever, the same signs that you get when you have your kid.
Let me ask you something. Your dog is fine with your family, okay?
Mm-hmm.
All of a sudden you take the dog out, it's barking at everybody. Is it a bad sign?
No,
the dog is fearful. But if you talk to some people who don't know their rectal quarters from their elbow, they'll say, "Oh, the dog, you know, he's psychotic. He's going to attack." And then you go to some people, "Oh, we better put him down or take him to the shelter. We can't handle this." When all you need is a place like this, the Dog Chick, and they'll show you how to deal with that behavior.
But you have to be into your pet to have a pet. You can't just have it's not a fly-by-night type of situation.
Exactly. It is a commitment, and this is the best way. This is the best thing you could do for your pet. Bring it to the dog behaviorist, and they have so many certifications. You just can't bring it to anybody. Because there's people out there that call themselves trainers, and again, they don't know their rectal area from their elbow. So this is the right way to go here. You know,
fair enough. Do you, Patrick, know the difference between the rectal area and your elbow?
I hope I do. Every time I go into the bathroom, I hope I get it right.
I always have to check. Yeah, I bring a little mirror along with me to make sure that the one looks different from the other. Yes. But that's basically how
Patrick
it works.
Definitely knows because these comic books are fantastic. The first comic books I ever read in my life.
That was a segue.
Yeah.
Like to hear you were part of a segue just now.
So Patrick, why don't you tell us about yourself and the very first comic that Charlie has ever read?
Oh my gosh, it's such
five of them.
Five comics that Charlie's
ever read. All at once, Charlie? Yes.
At the same time, he was reading five. He didn't know how to read them, so he read all five at the same time, one page at a time. Book to book.
Well, that's an honor, I'd like to say.
But once you read the first one, you get on a roll, you want to see what's happening, and then things happen.
It's like crack,
you don't
right?
See. Yes! Comics kill.
Comics kill? That's a no. We don't say that.
I'm kidding.
Kind of.
So the book is called The Misadventures of Electrolyte and the Justice Purveyors, and we have four issues out that Charlie just devoured in a matter of hours and read through, and it's the premise is the superhero group is called the Justice Purveyors, and they're led by Electrolyte, and he is a superhero who has the power to cure people's hangovers. And the other members of the group are Scaby, and he's someone who can shrink to the size of a bug and live on someone's skin. There's the Sentence Finisher, and he's a telepath with the limited ability to finish people's sentences. And there's the Capitalist, and unlike other billionaire superheroes, he doesn't buy utility belts or iron suits. He actually just pays criminals with cold cash, not to commit crime. So he skips that whole middle step, and just has a utility belt with wads of cash.
So,
all right,
we want to just take one at a time. I personally like the Capitalist because that's just. The logic behind that.
He's just throwing money. That was
hysterical. What is to prevent the criminals from wanting to commit more crimes knowing that he'll pay them off?
Well, even criminals aren't too greedy. I mean, the criminal, they have to get their cash and then they go out and, they either buy crack or comic books. So they...
Because comic kill.
Then they go back and commit more crimes, and that's, it's never-ending cycle.
It's a cycle.
Yeah, it's, recidivism is an awful thing.
So where did you get the idea for all these characters? Where did Electrolyte come from? Where did that power come from? Were you drunk one day and like, geez,
I did many years of heavy drinking, and, every morning after I drank, I would say, why isn't there a superhero that could help with this? And he just popped into my mind. I actually thought about it about 6 years ago, and it was sort of when electrolytes were becoming like the key word, the hip word. They were always in Gatorade and stuff, but then they were putting in water, they were putting in juice, they were putting in everything. And I kept hearing it. I was like, that sounds like a superhero to me. So it just sort of popped into my mind that way. So I thought of him first, and then I sort of built the team off of him.
All right, so now the Sentence Finisher. Where did that one come from?
That guy you will meet at every party that you go to.
Wow.
That, the guy who is there and he wants to, just finish your thoughts with probably, completely the opposite idea that you're thinking
exactly.
of.
Exactly. And completely misinterpreting everything you said.
Hysterical. It's hysterical to read this. Because you even get mad at him.
Yeah. Yeah, he's the guy who you're, just hanging out, and you're just like, I'd like to go outside and go for a drive with me. No, I wasn't thinking that at all.
Is that come from?
It hits too close to home, actually.
It's like, what was that in Seinfeld, the close talker?
Yeah.
Like, that's his power. I just talk close to you. That's just
Like, please get away from me.
So realistically, the one with the most, I guess, power, quote unquote, until you read the book, that is Scabby. So where did that guy come from?
He actually came from my brother-in-law. All of a sudden, he was just telling me the one time that when he got scabies, and I was like, you know, what is that? And he's like, well, basically, it's a flea that burrows into your skin and, you know, just hangs out. And I was like, well, thanks for telling me that. And I'm glad you didn't tell me that before you married my sister.
All right. So now do you have all
How do you even get those?
That's the strange thing. I think it's like a version of the bed bug. Like, I don't know. Right. I don't know if bed bugs can actually burrow into your skin, though.
Fair enough. Hey, we're off that subject. Let's get back to your book.
So now that you got all these ideas of characters mixing together, what made you decide to put it in a book? Why, as the question has been for the past couple of weeks,
why
does
comic
an independent producer make a comic book?
Well, why comic books in general?
All right, there you go. You know?
Yeah, well, I actually wrote this as a screenplay, and so I wrote it as a screenplay, and I entered it into a film competition. So I went to a couple of different competitions. I went to the Austin Film Festival, which is actually a really good thing for writers and screenwriters and stuff. So I went there, and I met the guy who wrote Shrek, Terry Rossio. And it's really good because you can just go up to these guys and talk to them and be like, hey, Terry Rossio, you know, I need some advice, and they're really nice and accessible, and they'll say, oh yeah, you know, this is what you're going to do. So I said, I wrote this script with superheroes in it, but no one wants to, you know, listen to it, and I can't get anyone to read it. And he said, just make it into a graphic novel. And he said, that's, you know, that's the way a lot of people are developing their screenplays now, because it's, you know,
it's like a built-in press kit.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like you're
ready to go.
Even the storyboards are already done for the, and it's so easy to see the concept, and especially for like a high concept thing, it's you know, all right there. You just have to go through it. So I did that, and I got the first issue, and the first issue actually sort of ends, and so I said, you know, well, that's it. But then I thought of the Super Life Coach, and I was like, oh, this is a really good idea. So, you know, maybe I'll do another issue. So I did issue two, and then at the end of each issue that I've done, I've like gone to the last page of the script where I could end it, and I'm like, oh, maybe I'll just continue this on.
It's in his blood now, you know, can't get rid of it.
He got bitten by
it. It's going to keep on. There's going to be an idea at the end of every comic. Like,
yeah,
I can do one more.
Yeah, now I like see these characters in my sleep, and they're like, don't kill us, please. So,
write one more issue. No, it's called hiatus. That's the word you got to teach your characters.
That's right. That's right.
So when you decided to make the book, how did you go about finding talent?
I went on digitalwebbing.com and just posted an ad and got a lot of different people. And the person that I unfortunately ended up with was Butch Mappa, and he's actually from the Philippines. So I got a bunch of submissions, and he was there at the top, and he just... It was really just sort of chance that his schedule was free. I liked his stuff, and he was ready to go. So, and he actually got the other people for issue one, the colorist and the letterer. So he sort of assembled the team, and we've sort of switched it around a little bit. But he's done every issue, all the penciling and inking. But we've switched colorists on issue four to Francesca Zabon. She's in Italy. But everyone else, I mean, the letterer Wilson, De La Fuente, and Butch Mappa are both from the Philippines, and they've done all four issues.
In the old days, you know, the Marvel guys worked in one little bin. Now you're working with people across the globe. How does that affect you? I mean, you don't actually meet these people. You're just talking to them digitally. Is that, I think it's different how things are nowadays?
It's sort of funny. I mean, yeah, I've never met anyone that I've worked with for any of these four issues. In a way, it's sort of good because you just sort of, you cut to the chase on everything, and there's not that I don't want to, you know, get to know these people, but it's just, you know, it's all business. It's like, all right, this is what we got to do. Let's get it done by this date. And there's almost no room for flip-flopping, or, you know, like, oh, I can't get stuff done, and you're my friend, and remember we were hanging out, and we became friends. It's all, you know, sort of business. So in a way, it's sort of good that, well, it's not good, but
I never want flip-flopping. I was not intended to be a factual statement.
it keeps things just professional.
Do you find that this should be what more people are doing out there, to go look and just be strictly professional, you know, work with professionals, don't work with people who are your friends?
I think so. I mean, I think that if you work with your friends, you know, your buddy who, because I have a friend who actually colors, and I never work with him just because they're the guy that's always going to have the lame excuse, like, oh, dude, you know, I'm sorry, but I couldn't get to it because, you know, I had to walk my dog, or, you know, take my dog to the vet.
My dog is busy eating a baby.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, I think it's good to work with people who are not your friends.
For the characters themselves, you also have another group of superheroes, like the real quote-unquote superheroes. And I've noticed that in the group scenes, you actually have some superheroes that look vaguely familiar to other ones. Is that on purpose?
That is a choice of Butch Mappa. He's sort of thrown those in, and you know, as sort of his he's a funny guy, so he's added like those things, you know, just for people to get a kick out of. And yeah, the other the team that the Justice Purveyors go up against for the contract with the multinational corporation is called the Perfect Four, which is the Mr. Perfect, Musclehead, Zephyr, and Sparkler, who actually turns out to be Electrolyte's love interest.
Oh, so you just
which I didn't see coming, by the way.
Oh, you didn't?
Well, the whole way that worked out, that was beautiful writing, because usually I pick out everything that's going to happen.
Oh, nice.
And I was like, oh, look at that. Look at that. You know, so that was a good storyline. I liked that a lot.
Oh, nice. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. Go ahead.
So is this book for people like Charlie who've never read a book before, or is this for a fan?
No, wait. I've read several hundred books before. I've never read a comic book. And I was finding myself enjoying them, like, and then finishing one and going to the next one, and then, you know, I was sad because I hit the last one. So there you go. All
we'll right. have to make
continue.
Some
continue. Yeah. So yes, when's the next issue coming out for Charlie? Dedicated to Charlie.
Yeah, you never know.
Don't dedicate nothing to me. Just finish the next one.
This is inspirational. Thank you, Charlie.
Yeah.
So what advice can you give out there for other independent creators? I mean, talk about deadlines. Talk about the things that no one really knows until you're actually doing it.
Well, I at the last New York Comic Con, I sat next to this guy, and now I can't remember his name, and he was telling me how he goes and gives speeches at, you know, about creating comics, and he does a whole soup to nuts. He does everything, you know, the stories, he writes the scripts, does the drawings, everything. And he was saying how he goes and gives speeches and says, you know, making comics is not fun. It's not, you know, it's arduous. It's a pain in the butt. It's you know, and time consuming. So that's the thing, that it's, you have to really want to do it. You have to really love it. And the most gratifying thing is at the end of the day, when you have, you can hold a book in your hand and say, you know, I created this. So that's you have to look at the end result for what you're shooting for, and just go through all the garbage that it takes to get there. But the whole process is, it takes a long time, and especially if you're collaborating with people, you have to a lot, probably triple the amount of time that you think it's going to take. You know, if you think you can get an issue together in 2 months, a lot 6 months, because there's it being a collaboration and having different people. There's always someone who just bails yeah. on you, and
there's always someone with his own agenda.
Yeah, they'll have another project, which is fine, but some people aren't.
No,
you
no,
know,
it's not. No, if you have no, you can be honest. If you're working on something and you need to get it done, and someone comes and flakes,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and ruins your project or ruins the time frame, then
yeah,
we can call him a jerk. You know, we can go ahead and. Yeah. And say that's a bad thing.
Well, no one I've worked with has ever flaked, but there's always been delays, and you know, I'm pulling my hair out, and that's but everyone has thankfully at the end of the day done their job. But it's a thing that for a lot of us this isn't, you know, our main job. So we have day jobs, and that this is you know, more an avocation than a vocation.
And the creative process of writing this, and you're sitting there and you're thinking, you're in think mode, and then you write something down and you look at it and you go, oh, I'm liking that, right? Which I can tell from these books, because there's a lot of little things I see and I go, oh, good one, or oh, and way to go on this one. Like, for instance, in The Life Coach with Tommy Blaze, I think everybody knows him.
Oh, sure, you know? Yeah.
And when you put him in, and you just like, yeah, perfect.
Yeah.
And does that, do you sit back and go, ah, yeah, does that give you gratification?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah. That's, for me, it's a real slow process, which is great. You know, I don't have any deadline as far as, you know, getting a book out every month, right, or book out, you know, once a year. I mean, there's really no deadline. It's, you know, we publish everything ourselves, so if we get out two books a year, that's good for us. That right. We did two this past year, so that was, and we did one the year before, so that's, so maybe two this year, but we'll see. It's nice and slow. I mean, that's the thing that I like about writing this stuff is not writing, you know, and you don't, there's no pressure to get stuff down on paper. You just, I can take time and think about it and get the whole story in my head, and because so much time, I think, for writing is wasted just with bad ideas and putting stuff down on paper just for the sake of putting it down on paper and then being like, well, that's garbage, now I have to start over again. So if you have enough time and you don't have real strict deadlines like you know, bigger publishers do, you can really, as you said, Charlie, just sort of sit back and just sort of be in thought mode and let things come to you, and, you know, just take things from the ether. Like if you hear something on the radio and say, oh, you know, that's a pretty good idea, I wonder if I can work that in, or right, you know, I'll take that and sort of twist it, and then you can put it down on paper, and then that might not be what you end up with, but something may evolve from that idea, you know, not the same exact idea, but it'll evolve from that idea, and then, you know, maybe that's the final script.
Yeah, and it's you could see it. You could see the time that was involved in the writing, because while you're reading it, as you're reading it, as a reader who, you know, didn't write it, you sort of pick up on things and you sort of acknowledge little things along the way, and you get the chuckle parts. It's like, oh my God, nice, good one. And
oh,
that's
cool.
What you're saying. You're reading and you go, good one, good one. And that's what the books are all about. Like, as you read them, it's just a lot of creative stuff that you're going to acknowledge yourself when you read it.
So when you had originally came out with the screenplay, did you have actors in mind, or like a type that you wanted to cast as your group of characters?
Not really particularly. Someone told me that Joel McHale would be good for Electrolyte, and that's, I sort of got that. But the funny thing is, the characters were drawn, like Electrolyte was drawn, and then I went to a couple shows, and at two different shows, this guy was like, oh, so Electrolyte was drawn after you, right? He was drawn in your likeness. I was like, well, no, I never met the artist. And I was like, and you know, I don't really look like him. Electrolyte has a cone head. And he's and two people said, oh yeah, like you. And I was like, oh, thanks. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I was like, oh, thanks.
And security. Now, have these two removed.
Yes.
But that doesn't really answer your question, but that was just a funny story I thought I'd add.
It was a funny story. When you are at a table, We've been on both sides of the table, actually. Hassan and I, Charlie has not had the pleasure of being on the other side of the table. What is that like when you're on at a convention and you're on the other side of the table trying to get the customers coming by? What is that like?
Like at a typical show, like a 3-day show, first day I'm you know, sort of nervous. I'm like, oh, I hope I bought all these issues. I hope I'll sell some. Second day, I've sold a couple issues. I'm sort of getting into it, and you know, I've done a bunch of conventions, so I have the shtick down. The third day, I'm really depressed, and I'm like, what am I doing with my life, and what is going on? I gotta get out of here.
So yeah, pretty much a typical experience at a comic book show.
Weren't you just saying that? I was saying that the other day at how the Comic-Con takes away from the...
Yeah, you were saying that. Yeah, it was just like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't want to be here. I don't like these people. I don't like this. I don't even like this medium. It's like, I guess I would describe it very quickly as... before a meal and after a meal, like at a restaurant. You go to a restaurant, it's all this anticipation, you sit down with your friends, you can smell the food, so you're like, even no matter how hungry you may have been or how semi-hungry, as soon as you walk in that restaurant and they sit you down, you're ready to eat, you know, and everything on the menu looks good and everything, and then you've eaten, and hopefully, God willing, you had a big meal, you ate it all, and now you don't ever want to see food again. Now you just want to kind of roll out of the place and go home and not see any food commercials or anything like that.
Hide your head in shame.
Yeah, and I mean it's a little different because when you go to a show, you're going for a specific reason. You got your box of books, and you know you're hoping to break even. You're hoping people notice you, and then kind of halfway, that's the bread and the water. And then halfway through the second day, you have your entree, and you're like, yeah, you know, I could eat two or three of these, you know, and I could sell a couple of these books, and hey, buy my book, and you know, stop messing around, don't waste my time. And by the third day, you're like, I don't want to do this anymore.
It is. I mean, it's the 3 days. It is exhausting. By the third day, you're worn out.
And it's all hustle.
Yeah, it's definitely a hard sell. You're saying this, giving the same pitch to every single person that passes by your table. You know, you don't even want to miss one person. You're handing out flyers, you know, and saying, giving them the quick pitch, and you know, some people will laugh, and then just keep going. Some will stop, and you know, want to engage you and find out a little bit more, and then hopefully you make a sale. I mean, I was trying to figure out the percentage. I mean, I think it's 0.something% that actually buys an issue after you know you pitch everyone. But I was half joking about the. You know, the 3 days of from joy to shame cycle. The best thing is, you know, you don't get into it expecting to sell every single issue that you bring with you. The best thing is when people come, they get your concept, they like it, they buy an issue, and then if you hear from them afterwards, even left through an email, and they just say, oh, you know, I've read your books, it was cool. I mean, that's the best thing.
And, that's kind of the worst part, because it you're never prepared for how much that's going to move you. If someone says, oh, I really like this, and it really just inspires you to keep, you know, to keep punishing yourself.
I'll hit myself again.
Yeah. I've been there, and it's been very brief, you know, like people like, I really like this, and you can tell that they're sincere, you know, you can tell you've never heard of them before, you've never seen them before, you don't remember selling them a book, so they got it. They got their hands on it somehow. And then they sought you out just to tell you some nice things, and that makes up for every other piece of crap thing that happened to you the whole weekend.
Yeah, like a bunch of people at this past show came up, and they were like, oh, you're the one person I wanted to see, and oh my god, you have new issues, oh my god, this is awesome. And I was like, are you talking to me? Is there like someone behind me?
That's awesome.
Have you gone so far as to think of dressing up as Electro Light?
Well, this we had a sparkler dress up as our.
I didn't see her.
Of course,
but I think I saw you the first day. She was there the second and third day.
Oh,
of course,
that's not cool.
That's why you got to keep coming back. As he's a savvy businessman.
That's not.
Why didn't you bring Sparkle tonight?
Yeah. She's off.
She's out saving the universe, man.
Exactly. But and I actually got vindication.
She's raising the baby.
Care of the kids.
She's raising the baby. Yeah,
exactly. But I got vindication because some guy actually wrote me an email and was like, "Oh, I read your book. It was awesome." And the second paragraph was like, "Oh, and awesome idea having the woman dress up as Sparkler, because I wouldn't have come to your table and bought your issue without it." And I was like, "Yeah, that's it. Thank you."
So what were you going to do? What was your plan with your screenplay? You went to the seminar or whatever. And were you just going to sell it and just try to move in that way?
Yeah, I mean, that was I've written like a bunch of screenplays, and that was that. Yeah, the idea was, I guess if you don't live in LA, that's you're sort of behind the eight ball to begin with. But a lot of film festivals are the way that you can sort of get entree into them through, like, Austin Film Festival has a pretty good reputation, and like the Nickel Fellowship is a pretty good thing. So if you win the Austin Film Festival or the Nickel Fellowship, your script may get looked at by someone in LA. I mean, that's how crazy it is that it can be so proven that you have an awesome idea, and then even then you're not even guaranteed that anyone will look at it. So,
but look at it in this particular situation. If you had sold the script, you wouldn't have a say on what any of these characters look like.
That's true.
What any of the sight gags and the jokes and stuff like that. And now you're pretty much you've written the entire blueprint. So anyone who wants the concept now has to follow that blueprint, or they're going to ruin the whole concept. So,
yeah. I mean, that's a good point. I mean, things sometimes work out that way. Yeah. You know, one thing leads to another. That's you didn't expect that it would, and
it's a bit lackluster coming down from a movie. You know, you want to do a movie, someone says do a comic book, but then you don't realize how much you can really manipulate the medium.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And you solidify a lot of things, because if anybody starts to gravitate to the book heavily and people want to do the book, they're forced to follow the template that you designed.
Sure. Yeah. That's so true. Yeah, and that's true that I wouldn't have had one book. So it's
and also you're kind of got the comic book disease now.
You can't
issue after issue after issue.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question. You write all this, you send it out to these people to produce, and then you get the first issue and you look at it. What did that feel like?
Oh, it was the best thing. I mean, the first issue, I had no expectations, so I had never done it before, and I just was sort of going through the motions to do it. I would, you know, get emails. I mean, designing the characters and all that stuff, I really got into, I had just seen the pencil drawings. I couldn't really make out what everyone looked like, and even when Butch inked everything, I couldn't really make it out that well. It wasn't until the coloring got laid out, then I was blown away and was like, oh my gosh, this actually looks really good. And, you know, and then when I got the first issue, it was incredible. You know, it's just a cool feeling that you know, you look at it and like, oh my god, this is
my stuff.
Yeah.
So you said you had other screenplays. Do you have any ideas for more comic books, or this is your one comic book idea?
Well, this will probably be the one that I'll concentrate on. I've wrote some other screenplays, but they're sort of more like kitty based. I wrote a screenplay about Jackalope that tries to figure out if other Jackalopes really exist. And I think that's more like kitty based. And this I really like the characters in this, and sort of like the level of humor that I can get out there, and it's sort of my sense of humor. So
yeah.
if I write it and I laugh, I like doing that.
This one's got its finger on it, because there's it's on par with a lot of humor. I mean, it's on par in a really good way with a lot of humor that's out there today.
Oh, cool.
So it meshes very well with the way where everyone's mind is these days.
So we got 4 minutes left, less than 4 minutes. So if you have any places you want to promote, anybody you want to mention, now's the time.
Okay, we are
no pressure.
No pressure. We are available. Actually, the last two issues are now being put up on graphically. The first two issues are there. The last two issues are 3 and 4 going up, I think, within a week. The first issue is free on graphically.com. Graphically.com, they're pretty good. They have a lot of, they're more geared to independent creators, but they've grown really fast within the past year. And I really like working with them a lot. They really spend time with independent creators and, you know, really give them their due. And I would say for any independent guy that wants to get in there quick, because they're doing deals with all the bigger guys now. Like, I think they're trying to court Image, and I think they've already done deals with DC and Marvel and stuff. So, we're available there. We're available on Drive-Thru Comics. And actually, we're going to get set up on the Kindle within a couple months. So that's... Wow. that's where we're available. Unfortunately, we can't make the numbers work because of, you know, we can't get into comic book stores, make the numbers work to do that, just because we can. And I can't go, I've heard too many stories about, you know, Diamond and going down that road, so that's... So, like Hassan said, it's digital, and that's I totally agree with you that it's these things are just going to be more for, you know, they might even be at conventions just for collectors, you know, in the future, just, you know, sell them in glass frames. And
of course, there's your website, which is...
Oh, my website, which is thejusticeprevairs.com.
Okay. You seem to forget. You can't just, you don't need to go to my side. So, we have any final thoughts? Since you are a guest host, you have a final thought for anybody out there listening?
My final thought is I'd like to thank all you guys for inviting me out here. It's been awesome. For any independent creators, it's a grind, but, you know, keep at it because it's really satisfying and getting the medium that you want. And the way things are going towards digital, I mean, there'll be more opportunities for things, I think, to be more economically possible for people that, you know, I think will turn the corner and independent guys can sort of start to break even in the future.
Charlie, you have a final thought?
I would say that for me, who never read a comic book, to pick up these comics and to enjoy them, because there's a lot of writing-wise, there's a lot of little ditties that keep you going and say, oh my God, great, great, great. And before you know it, you're at the last book and you're going, oh, there's no more after this. So to have that feeling, they're great books. So go out, read these books. They're fabulous.
Hassan, your final thought?
I'm pretty much against almost all the digitization in our lives, with the exception of comic books. I think that's actually, even though I blasted it at the beginning of the show, I think that's the best way. That's the best way the medium can go to get rid of a lot of the middlemen like Diamond and some of these other places that come and keelhaul your entire idea just to make a percentage. And also that I really hope that these aren't my last thoughts.
My final thought is that this book is really great. I am so glad that I walked by and your pitch just nailed me. A guy who can cure hangovers. That was the greatest, and I read the book, and it was really good. So you guys should really go out there, check it out, justiceprevairs.com, right?
The Justice Purveyors.
TheJusticePurveyors.com, and the book is called The Misadventures of Electro Light and the Justice Purveyors. So that about does it for this week on It Came From the Radio. Join us right here and every week on WGBB. If you miss any portion of the show, you can go online to www.itcamefromtheradio.com and listen to the archives. It should be up in a week or so. If you can't even wait that long, you can go to places such as Podcast Planet or iTunes and listen to us there. Join us on like us on our Facebook page, our Twitter page, and we will see you next week.
Take it easy.
See ya.
You have been listening to It Came From the Radio with Mark Torres. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests did not necessarily reflect the views of WGBB, the owners, or staff. And now we return you to your earthly scheduled broadcast.